Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming to the session, and it's my great pleasure to introduce the first presenting company of this morning, Antares Pharma. The company pipeline targeting billion-dollar market. So presenting today is President and CEO Paul Wolton, and without further introduction, I'm going to turn it over to Paul.
Please. Okay. Thanks, Yun, and thank you very much to Karen for inviting us to speak at this conference. And I will be joined today by LaRue Yester, who's in the audience here in the front, who's the guy responsible for the launch of Atrexup, and he'll take you through the value proposition and how we're doing with the product. But this is a great time to be with Antares. As just mentioned, we have a pipeline story which we're developing, and I'll talk a little bit about the new testosterone data that just came out as well, and talk about our strategy going forward, which is going to be built around expanding our pipeline, because this is where the value creation really starts. There's a safe harbor statement there for everyone who wants to read it. It is available on our website. And our mission is quite simple. It's to make it as easy for a patient to be able to self-administer an injection subcutaneously as it would be to take a tablet. And this is the device that is used for Atrexup. You basically give yourself an injection in less than 3 seconds. It's safe, easy to use, and what we know from the patient experience is that they like working with this device. And we're going to build a pipeline around this type of device technology. I believe we're one of the world leaders in this space, and there's nobody else actually, a company of our size, actually doing what we do, which is developing these 505B2 products using device technology like the Vivex device. So the update on the company is we've launched Atrexup for rheumatoid arthritis ourselves, and this week Leo went live with the dermatology call. So now we have 75 reps from Leo calling on dermatologists, and we've also just announced the testosterone results about a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to show a graph later on which includes some of the data, but I'm extremely pleased with the data we got from that trial. We've also built out the corporate functions as well. We added 2 new directors to the board last year, and I want to talk about both Marvin Sampson and Bob Roche, who've joined us. We felt it's important to add these guys to the board because they bring so much experience in the type of company we want to become, and they've been extremely helpful at that level and provide us with advice on an almost daily basis. But it's really nice for me to know that we can attract high-quality board members to this company. We're also attracting high-quality team members as well as we start to grow out the management team. And I expect that we'll be making more appointments to the team as we go forward, of course, as we grow. But Bruce Freundlich joined us in November, and Bruce is actually a well-known rheumatologist. He was a visiting professor at Penn, had worked at Wyeth, in fact, on Enbrel, has published widely in the immunological space, and he's been on board since November. And thoroughly enjoys working with us and doing what we're doing with Atrexup. And lastly, I think financially, we've been able to end the quarter of the third quarter, actually, this is $70 million in cash. Financially, we're still strong as a company, certainly more than enough to carry us through this launch phase of Atrexup. So when you look at the business structure, actually, this is a slide, I think, which shows quite clearly how we're starting to delineate the business. We have our traditional business, which is built on partnerships and a royalty model. We have royalties coming into this company from some of the old legacy gel products. Remember, we sold that technology to Ferring a few years ago, which allowed us to focus on the injectable segment of the market. We have partnerships with Teva, Ferring, Actavis, Meta, Pfizer. I expect that we'll be adding more partners in the future. Since the approval, actually, of the Atrexup product, we've had 2 incoming inquiries about working with us on our device technology, and I anticipate that we also see more such partnerships being formed as we go down the road here. And the other half of the business is what we're developing. It's the pipeline build that we're working on right now, the QST, the QSM, and the 216 and 217 dates there are the dates we anticipate these going to the market. And the product business is fed by the pipeline engine, and the first one of those, of course, is Atrexup, which we're taking out to rheumatologists. And as I mentioned earlier, the Leo guys are taking out to dermatologists. I was actually over in Copenhagen with the Leo management team last week, and I can tell you that they're very excited about the future potential of Atrexup as a product. And this is the idea. It's one that allows us to produce these therapeutic entities which target an unmet patient need. In the case of methotrexate, it was that there was a limitation on the amount of drug that could be absorbed orally. Combining our own technology with known molecules and then developing a novel route of administration with our device platform. In the case of testosterone, for example, it's the subcutaneous route, which allows patients to be able to give themselves an injection at home. With an intramuscular injection of testosterone, it's best done under medical supervision. And what we're doing is we're taking all the technique into the machine itself to enable a patient to be able to give themselves an injection at home. And then we're also trying to be sensible about the way we develop the commercial structure for the company and going after specialty targets where you can really make a difference with a relatively small sales force, but selling differentiated products to targeted physicians. And this is how we do it. One of the things that I think is really important is that for companies like Antares, it's essential to be driven by a patient need or a market demand for a product. And then you marry that with the technology that you're working on. We've actually got an engine at the company for developing new product candidates. It all comes from the factors. Is there a market opportunity? Can we do it technically, early stage work? We do a little bit around that. And most important thing is, if somebody actually going to pay for it? Because if you can't get somebody to pay for the product, then you're really wasting your time developing it. But we go through all of this. We have the team in place to be able to do it. And the first three programs out of this, Atrexup, QST, and QSM, are already in development. We're in the process right now of screening about another 11 product opportunities, and our intent is to add three more to the pipeline this year as a company. And the long-term value creation in this company is all around the pipeline build. And this is why it's important for us, because when I look at Antares, the company has a unique technical platform. We are one of the pioneers in the development of self-injection technology. Our needle-free technology was the first platform that got marketed. From that, we were also one of the pioneers in auto-injector technology, what we call the Vibex system. And we have probably about 20 to 25 years of history of working on these systems. It's only in the past 5 years that we've really been able to apply this technology to a pipeline of drugs, including those of our own. We have a partnership with Teva as well, where we're working on the generic EpiPen. And they also have two multi-dose pens in a partnership with us. So I think we're the only company that has needle-free auto-injector and then multi-dose pen technology available. And it's all built on mechanical technology, which is important because mechanical technology is very reliable, and our engineering group over in Minneapolis specialize in being able to make these products easy to use, but at the same time, well-engineered internally, so they're also reliable. And this is the product pipeline we have. I think that for a company of our size, a pipeline of this order of magnitude is quite substantial. We've got 60 people in the company now, but from the pipeline with Atrexup, which we just marketed, Leo are taking it out to psoriasis. We have HGH on the market over here in the US and Europe and in Japan. We have Alestrin, which is one of the gel products which is sold by Meta, and Gelnique. All of these products provide us with revenues. Underneath that, we have the pipeline products, which of our own include the testosterone replacement product, QST, and then we have the QSM, which is going into the CNS application, and we anticipate filing the IND on that later on this year. Behind that, we also have some other partnered programs which are moving along, primarily with Teva, who's a very important partner for us. And then we have the last product on that slide, which is the branded OTC product, which for confidentiality reasons we cannot name, but that's with Pfizer, and we anticipate that one will actually make it to market in 2016. So I'm going to take a break now, and I'm going to introduce you all to LaRue Uesta, who's our head of the pharmaceutical division at Antares and responsible for launching the Atrexup product, and I'm going to ask LaRue to take you through the next 10 slides so you can get a feel for how we're doing out there today. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Good morning. So at the end of January, we had our launch in Orlando, Florida, and 25 sales representatives have been running full speed, and we are currently under a green flag and continue to run at full speed. This week, the LEO sales organization with 75 sales representatives are actually hitting the road as well. So we now have a full complement and a fully capable commercial organization with Antares partnering with LEO behind this product, which, as you can see, is available in four different strengths. I actually want to say two things, which Paul alluded to, but I want to make sure we all understand that there are two critical success factors for a branded product like ours to be successful, to be able to differentiate from competitors so that we can have a sustainable competitive edge. And the first thing might be counterintuitive. It's not about the ease of administration and the ability to self-inject subcutaneously. First and foremost, there has to be clinical value. If you can't have a benefit from a clinical perspective, then, you know, you're just another me too in the eyes of the physician. And payers certainly won't pay for just an easy-to-use device. So I think those are two key aspects which we certainly know exist in Otrexup, and it's part of the criteria we look at when we determine which of these compounds that Paul was alluding to will make it into our pipeline. So this is actually a very sophisticated, advanced technology in the device, and I'm actually proud to say, as an American citizen, that it is a designed, manufactured, assembled, labeled, and packaged right here in the United States of America. It is, as you know, the first and only approved subcutaneous methotrexate, despite the fact that there's a multi-dose vial available in both a preservative and a preservative-free. This would be the only FDA-approved subcutaneous formulation. It's a single-use, disposable device that's really easy to use, as Paul showed you. Some of you have seen it demonstrated. Just literally twist off the cap, take the safety off, and within 3 seconds, you've injected. Actually, the energy source behind this is so powerful that it will inject the full dose, which is less than a half a cc, in less than a half a second. It's really easy to grip for patients who have rheumatoid arthritis. Many of them have gnarly hands, or certainly as their disease progresses, it's possible if they haven't been in good control that their hand function and other joint function decreases over time. So it's important to keep these patients in control. It's a very fine 27-gauge needle, half inch in length, but less than a half inch necessary to actually insert the needle. And it's a lockable needle guard, which is actually kind of clever because if you look at the device, the needle guard itself has got a cuff around it. And when you put that gentle pressure on the belly or on the thigh where you're going to inject, what it does is it stretches the skin out. And as you gently push down, the needle is inserted. Unlike other auto-injectors where it's fired out like a dart into you, this gentle, slow pressure of the manual insertion, if you like, by depressing the cuff down, is what gets the needle in. And during the studies and now anecdotal feedback from the field, as we get feedback from our rheumatologists, you know, patients actually wonder whether they've successfully, you know, have I actually done it? Have I really injected myself? So it's phenomenal how this device allows an easy injection that's really painless. We've talked about the quick delivery speed. Another thing that's really important, you might not know this, but especially kids with pediatric or juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, when they see this yellow liquid in the vial and then the parent has to start drawing it up in the syringe, I mean, they literally run out of the room or start vomiting or are nauseous because of what you might call this Pavlovian response of the yellow liquid. Well, in this case, you still need to see through that window there to make sure that, you know, there are no particles in there. It's just part of normal, appropriate use of injectables. But as a parent, you can actually put your hand over that and prevent the child from actually seeing that yellow color, which they have a really bad response to. The other thing that's really important from a clinical perspective is that the oral methotrexate is used up to a point. And then they switch to subcutaneous methotrexate. But with this device, many more patients can actually switch and actually make sure that they get the accurate dose. If you've ever tried to draw up through a 1cc insulin or a TB syringe from a vial, it's not that easy, and it's not that easy to read. And these are older folks who can't always read the very fine lines. If you have to draw up 0.6 milliliters, you know, where is that? Have you drawn some air, a bubble perhaps, into it. Remember, as you withdraw, there's a vacuum that's created in there, so it's pulling the plunger back. Using a vial, needle, and syringe is really not easy. This device really allows you to be able to self-inject, knowing that you've given yourself the exact precise dose that your doctor needs to give you to get that control so that your disease is in control. So most of you probably know this, but this market is pretty big. The rheumatoid arthritis market in the U.S. is estimated to be about 1.4 million DMARD-treated patients. These are data from Decision Resources, which would indicate that there are about 700,000 patients that are not yet on biologics. They're biologic naive. And that's really where our opportunity is, and we'll talk about our strategy in a while. But if you look at these 700,000 patients, there are about 420,000 of them that are currently on methotrexate because it is the rheumatologist's first choice go-to DMARD. Even those that are on biologics, most of them, about 65 to 70% of them, continue their treatment with methotrexate. And you'll notice that about 28,000 of those are currently on subcutaneous methotrexate using the vial, needle, and syringe, despite the issues that we've talked about. It used to be much higher than the 28,000, but because of the supply constraints and issues, physicians have really just gotten irritated and frustrated with their patients not being able to get access to the drug. And then there's 280,000 other DMARDs, sulfasalazine, hydrochloroquine, et cetera. These are all patients that are milder earlier on in their disease most often, and they will progress to methotrexate as their disease progresses. And I've mentioned this before, and this is the nice part about launching a product that has methotrexate in it. It's the cornerstone of rheumatoid arthritis therapy. This is the adopted child of rheumatologists. They took it away from the cancer field. They've made it what it is today. They are very comfortable with it. It's their first to go to. It's recommended in the EULAR guidelines, the ACR guidelines. However, most patients on oral methotrexate over time are going to have a gradual reduced response to their methotrexate, or as they need to titrate up to get to the dose that's effective to control their disease, they're unable to tolerate it because of the side effects, the nausea, et cetera. And then, as we'll show in this slide, and this is the real clinical benefit that I alluded to earlier on, if it wasn't for the fact that you actually have much greater bioavailability with subcutaneous methotrexate, there really wouldn't be any real reason to use it. But as you can see, for every dose, there's an increased bioavailability, even at the lower doses where oral methotrexate is readily absorbed through the gut. But at about 15 milligrams, oral methotrexate has a saturable limitation. The active absorption through the gut just kind of gets saturated. It's like trying to get a busload of people through that revolving door in the front of the hotel. It's just a point where you just can't get them in anymore. Whereas with a sub-Q formulation, you can see that it continues to increase, and at the 25 milligram level, 25 milligrams of oral is still 15. You're not getting any benefit, whereas with 25 milligrams of subcutaneous, you really have achieved a blood level that is adequate to control and continue to enhance and extend the treatment of these rheumatoid arthritis patients for, in some cases, for years, and they may never have to go on to a biologic. So that's the strategy. That's the focus. This is where the value of the product really lies, and payers recognize this. They understand the value proposition. They understand that we're not trying to replace cheap oral generic methotrexate. They will put a step edit in place. It's an electronic adjudicated step edit for the most, and they have absolutely no problem with that. So what you see here, I don't know if there's a pointer here, so I'll just point it out. I mean, right now, today, there is no middle. Less than 5% of patients are on subcutaneous methotrexate. The strategy here would be for those patients, as their disease progresses and they need to progress their treatment, rather than going to the next step, which is a biologic, which, by the way, are great drugs, so we're not competing against biologics either. We're simply having rheumatologists do what they do best, which is to take their beloved child methotrexate and extend and enhance their use of that product with their patients until it becomes necessary to add or switch to a biologic. So you're not interfering or jeopardizing the health outcome of the patient. You're allowing that patient to sit for the rest of their life with rheumatoid arthritis to continue to get the benefit of good control for their disease, even on biologics, Even with Enbrel, within 2 years, more than 50% of patients will have to switch to Humira or increase the doses of methotrexate. So there is no final cure in the biologic that says, okay, this is it, I'm good for the rest of my life. They will need to use every option they have across the 20, 30, 40 years that these patients have their disease. So the strategy fits beautifully from the rheumatologist perspective, it fits from a patient perspective, and it definitely fits from a payer perspective. So I'm going to switch over to psoriasis real quick. I'll be honest and say I didn't know much about psoriasis until I joined Antares. I knew a lot about rheumatoid arthritis. I launched Enbrel in 1988 with collaboration between Immunex and Wyeth. I headed up that joint venture. But at that time, we didn't have a psoriasis indication for Enbrel. And this really stunned me when we started looking at the data when we got word from the FDA that we're likely to get a psoriasis indication. I never realized that there's about more than a million patients who actually have a severe psoriasis, severe and debilitating. And the definition of severe and debilitating from psoriasis perspective is on the body surface. So it's severe when you have more than, 5 to 10 hand surface areas affected, and it's debilitating when it affects your ability to function as a normal human being. So if you have a one-hand area of psoriasis on your skin, that on your face, that would be debilitating. So it's a huge opportunity that we were very happy with when the FDA gave us the approval. And as you know, Leo is now our partner. We had discussions with many potential partners. Leo turned out to be the ideal partner. For a lot of reasons, but one reason in particular, and if you look at the label, you'll notice that it's very specific in the indication in that it mentions that patients can go to Otrexup, subcutaneous methotrexate, in these cases of severe recalcitrant or disabling psoriasis. But it also allows them then to go back when they've had their response to conventional therapy. And so for Leo, this works strategically because they have the topical conventional treatments. They'll treat their patients. Patient has a flare or gets to a point where they need to add a systemic. They choose methotrexate. They use Otrexup. They'll use it for 6 months, 12 months, maybe a year or more, however long it takes for that patient to really get back to a more of a stable condition, and they can continue to use the topical. So it's a beautiful strategic fit for Leo as well. I think Paul spoke about the partnership. We book sales. They are totally responsible for all dermatology sales and marketing, and then there's a profit share deal at the back end of it. I spoke a little bit about the polyarticular juvenile arthritis, and again, this was an area where we had underestimated the potential opportunity, and we've had a very, very positive response from a rheumatologist who, by the way, about 80% of kids with polyarticular juvenile arthritis are treated by the same rheumatologist that treats rheumatoid arthritis in adults. There are only about 250 pediatric rheumatologists in the U.S., and they see about 20% of these cases, and usually the more severe cases. And the response from them has been very, very positive. This device can easily be used by a 9, 10-year-old kid without any help from an adult. So I'll give you a very quick update on the launch. We've been on the market for exactly 4 weeks now. This is the fifth week, so today would be day three of the second month. In the first month, we were able to reach more than 90% of all our targeted rheumatologists. We target just over 2,500 rheumatologists, and they are responsible for prescribing more than 80% of all the methotrexate prescriptions. And it's, as you can see, with 25 reps, it was easy for us to reach them despite the disastrous snow and ice conditions that we faced the first 2 weeks after launch. Even in Orlando at the launch, one afternoon we tried to go to Universal. It was impossible. It was just too cold. So we've had very good feedback. Most of the rheumatologists that we've seen, in fact, nobody had a negative. We haven't had any negative feedback. I haven't had a single rep come back to me and say, oh, my God, this doctor said this, didn't like the product, was going to hate the product. I said to somebody here earlier on, I've launched good drugs, and I have, unfortunately, launched bad drugs as well. My first early indicator of whether a drug is going to be successful or not is when the reps come back after the first week, when you have that come to Jesus talk, and they tell you that there's a problem. How are they going to get their bonus? They're not sure what to do here. We haven't had any of that. We're a month in. We're on track under a green flag, as I've said. We've had a very high demand for samples. We've sampled more than 500 of these 2,500 rheumatologists. Now, you might say, well, why only 500? Well, we have a strategy for sampling. Unless we can get in a discussion and a dialogue with a rheumatologist some sense of commitment that they have patients in mind that they specifically want to request a sample for, they're not going to get a sample. The rep actually says, but if you define one tomorrow, call me, here's my card, I'll be back, you'll be able to, you know, get your sample. So we're not holding it back, we're just not dropping it and leaving it randomly so that there's a flood of samples out there. We've provided many services to make it as easy as possible. Insurance verification, 1-800 number, call it night or day. They'll call your plan, figure out what benefit structure you're in. And just on benefit structure, I mentioned earlier on, we now, only 9% of plans, 9% of covered lives are not covered today, 9%. Mostly Kaiser, United. Why? They just have a policy in the first 6 months of a 505B2 product coming on the market, they won't put you on. It's just their policy. So we're working with both Kaiser and United. We have a plan. United is actually very interested in talking to us and have worked with us on our cost offset model to understand exactly how much money they could save. So we keep fingers crossed on that one. In most plans, it's a tier three benefit. As I said, specialty, it's not a specialty tier, so it's not a co-co insurance. Copay is between $40 and $70. We have a $50 copay assistance. We'll buy it down for every month for a patient who goes online or activates the card at their pharmacy. So I'll just end off by saying it's steady growth, as projected, as expected. Understand that this is not migraine. It's not bronchitis. It's not like the patient goes into their doctor and says, you got to give me a prescription now. These patients go in every 3 months. The doctor will say, how are you doing? The patient will say, not so good. The doctor will say, let's look at what you've done. They might send away for labs. They say, come and see me in 2 weeks. Maybe take some steroids. 2 weeks goes by. They might say, okay, let's consider what your options might be. Why don't you call this number and see if you can get information on what your coverage is for Otrexup. Come back and see me 2 weeks later. We'll start you on a sample. So what I'm trying to say, it's not a flick of a switch. It's not an on-off button. It is a gradual process. It's a dialogue that takes between 2 and 12 weeks for a new treatment option to be initiated. So we're very happy with the results today. With that, I'll hand over to Paul.
Thanks, LaRue. And I'm going to talk about the next product, which is the QST testosterone. And as you heard from LaRue, we're very pleased about the first few weeks we've had on the market with Otrexup. QST is a different opportunity that we've been pursuing. It's a self-injection version of testosterone for testosterone replacement in men. And it's, again, a quick and easy injection to give. We are developing a subcutaneous route of administration for this product. Currently, the injectable that's used is given by a deep intramuscular injection every 2 or every 4 weeks. You can't do that at home. You can, but you shouldn't. But it's normally given under medical supervision. What we've also found out is that from the data we're just about to show, but giving it once weekly, which is actually in tune with the half-life of the drug, means that you're also able to optimize the blood levels and minimize that peak-to-trough ratio that you see with once or twice a month administration of an injectable. There's a growing awareness of this this problem in the U.S., and in fact, after being in Europe last week, I can actually see that the market is going to shift this way in Europe as well. And we've got a program to develop an NDA with a projected launch in 2016. We've got a meeting with the FDA coming up at the start of May, and we intend to start the phase 3 trial on this in the summer. It's an interesting marketplace because the growth of this in the last 5 years has been phenomenal. But I think the thing I would point to is actually the growth in the prescriptions for injectable, which despite the inconvenience of having to have an intramuscular injection once or twice a month, you can see that it now represents somewhere between 35 and 40% of the total number of prescriptions out there. If anything, the gels are starting to flatten off a little bit, but the injectables have continued to show strong growth. And I think we're well positioned to take advantage of this market opportunity. The fact is that patients are switching to injectables, and I think that a large piece of this is probably the transference issue that we've seen with the gels and the black box warning that comes alongside them. The market is large, and we also know from work we've done that patients who do get gels often don't get adequate absorption. Only about 5 to 10% of a transdermal dose of testosterone is actually absorbed by the body. The rest of it is either washed off or transferred to patients' families, for example. Whereas with an injection, you give the 100% of the drug actually goes to where it needs to go, which is inside the body. All the physicians we've talked to believe that weekly self-injection would improve patient compliance and actually optimize the testosterone levels. We have a self-contained auto-injector. Like LaRue said, it's got a very powerful spring in the back. This product will actually deliver an oily injection of testosterone through a 27-gauge needle in about 4 seconds, which if you're giving yourself an injection once a week, is very convenient indeed. We've already had meetings with the agency, and as I mentioned earlier, we expect this to go to market in 2016. The overview of the QST Phase 2 study, we measured 6 weekly doses of drug, blood levels before and after, in 29 adult males, all of whom had low testosterone. And the data I'm going to show you here is what it did. So the red lines there, the bottom line is the 300 nanogram per deciliter line, and the top line is the 1100. This is the range you need to be in when you're treating men with low T. And you can see there with our higher dose drug, the 100 milligram, we were just beneath that on average. And with the lower dose of the 50 milligram of testosterone, we were above the lower limit of 300 nanograms per deciliter. What this means is we have a range to work in with our product. We can vary the dose, and we intend to develop more doses than the ones just shown here. But I think it also shows that we've really optimized the control of testosterone. We're not getting big peaks. If you look at an intramuscular dose of testosterone given every 2 weeks, which would be a 200 milligram dose, you will see levels above 2,000 nanograms per deciliter. And the agency is very keen to make sure that there are as few excursions as possible above that 1,100 nanogram per deciliter range. And I think we've achieved this with QST. So we're very happy with this data. This slide will be on the website as part of the presentation. Right now, I would show you more data, but we're busy doing all of the intellectual property around this. So you'll expect to see a few more graphs coming out as we proceed over the next few months. Financial overview, as I mentioned earlier, we have a good cash position on the balance sheet right now. Revenues continue to grow as a company, and this is our transitional year. This is when we're transforming the company into a company that controls its own destiny, with sales of Atrexup already starting. I'm looking forward to a great 2014, and I think the long-term future for Antares, we've solidified the base now, and the long-term future and the pipeline build we're going through, I think promises a very exciting future indeed. So thanks very much, everyone, for listening, and we have a breakout room next door for anyone that's interested. I'm happy to answer questions there.